This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It is Thursday, February 27th, 2020. Thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. We have 28 degrees. At times, we get some flurries and we see a little peak of sunshine. We're going up to a high today of 32.
And the Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, we'll get the latest on the coronavirus that has the markets on a wild ride. It's Technology Thursday, and in line with coronavirus, we'll discuss drones and disinfecting robots and just what's behind the uptick in the housing market.
But first, let's set the table. The latest now on the coronavirus outbreak, the multiple angles. Joining us now is Michelle Cortez, health reporter with Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Michelle, welcome back to the program. Where are we right now as far as coronavirus in the United States? The big headline today, of course, is this person in California who managed to contract the disease without traveling abroad. They did not come back from China. Any new information on that particular case?
So what we're hearing about that particular case is that they initially went to a very small community hospital in Northern California and continued to worsen quickly over time. And then they were transferred to the University of California at Davis, where doctors there wanted to do a test to see if they had coronavirus. And they were turned down by the CDC. It took about another 4 days to get the test done and then 3 days to confirm that they were positive. And of course, you can imagine how many people were in contact with that patient over a week. A little frightening.
And then when we're talking about the spread of coronavirus in the United States, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar says at least 40 public health labs can currently test specimens for coronavirus, and that could double as soon as tomorrow. So when you talk about one small community hospital not catching it and then someone being transferred to a university hospital, a much larger hospital, and a more robust testing regimen can take place, does this mean does that speed up the times in which coronavirus can be detected in a particular person?
Well, actually, no. There's a couple of different things going on there, because originally they had hoped to have 200 different testing labs able to run these tests. And in fact, so now we're at 40, and that's up from 12 yesterday. So we're increasing quickly, but still the numbers are low. The issue with that patient is that the CDC is only testing now people who have been to China or had close contacts with people in China or a case. And the patient in Northern California didn't have that. So the implication is that it's just a needle in a haystack. It was a woman in Northern California who felt lousy, went to the hospital, got worse and worse, didn't know anyone in China, didn't travel to China. And then when they finally did test her, she turned up positive. But that hospital in Northern California, even UC Davis, wouldn't have done that test according to CDC guidelines.
Michelle, does it appear that the White House and the CDC are on the same page when it comes to addressing coronavirus? Are you hearing some things different from each area?
We are hearing a little things different from each area. The White House is a little bit concerned, I think, about calming things down. You know, the point is still that we only have 15 cases in the U.S., and they are looking at the areas where they think we're most likely to find people, and we're really not finding anything. And so the White House is trying to calm investors and calm Americans. The CDC is entirely focused on preparing for pandemic. That's what they do. And so they don't want people to be calm. They want people to be a little bit on their toes and ready in case it comes. And the reason for that is that now we see it everywhere in the world. We were able to shut China out, but you can't shut out Italy and South Korea and Brazil and the Middle East and everywhere. So we don't know where the threat's coming from. Lots of shots on goal.
Michelle Cortez, health reporter with Bloomberg, thank you so much for joining us. And coming up, a look at what's behind the uptick in the housing market.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Lower mortgage rates and mild weather appear to be good for the housing market. Joining us with the latest is Richard DeKayser, economist with Wells Fargo. Richard, is this mostly being fueled by the low mortgage rates and a little bit by the weather? Are there more factors here?
It's mostly mortgage rates. You know, we're seeing all-time record lows in most products. And that clearly makes any given house more affordable at a lower rate, and people are snapping them up. I also want to add hastily that this is all of this action that you've seen in terms of improved home sales comes before the latest leg down. Over the past month, we've seen a substantial move down in mortgage interest rates. So that's yet to be felt in the housing market.
I was going to ask you, what could the latest stock market correction mean for the mortgage rates in the weeks to come?
Well, the two tend to go in the same direction. That is to say, the stock market goes down, so too do mortgage rates. So the collapse we've been seeing in broad equity indices like the S&P 500 has pretty much moved in lockstep with mortgage interest rates and interest rates more generally. So if you want to call it a silver lining, I'll go with that. No one likes to see their 401k shrink, but if you're in the market to buy a new or existing home, find consolation in the mortgage rates.
When it comes to coronavirus, let's say you can wave a magic wand and everything stops right now. No new cases, no new indications that the virus is spreading anywhere in the world. Everybody is starting to get better. How long will it take for economic output in China and around the world and the U.S. to get back to normal?
Just a couple of months. You know, the U.S. has not even seen as yet any meaningful slowdown. All the data that we keep getting are better. We've seen impairment of confidence and financial market losses, which imply that there would be a slowing coming over the next month or so. But the data flow, such as it's been, has not yet shown any meaningful evidence of slowing. We know, however, without a question, that there's going to be a significant slowing in China. And if you waved your magic wand, it would take a couple of months for that to recover, because a lot of the losses we've seen in there are not the sort of temporary things that often accompany a natural disaster where people snap back, they've got to rebuy cars and refurnish their homes and rebuild their streets. It's a permanent loss. People who haven't gone to the movies or the entertainment event or retailing, a lot of that will be lost for good. And as a result, it'll take them some time to sort of burn through the blown up inventories that have resulted.
In the world of economic theory, is there any point of comparison? Can you go back to SARS in 2003 and 2004? Do you have to crack open the history book to look at the flu outbreak of 1918?
Well, I think SARS is a good starting point. It's not a perfect parallel, but it's a good starting point. If you examine what happened to China during that episode, China was on fire. I mean, its economy was growing at a 10 or 11% pace back in 2002, 2003, access to the World Trading Organization and the like really lit a fire under that economy. But when SARS hit, we saw a dramatic departure, a big slowing, with growth going from, let's say, 10.5% down to 3%. If you were to see anything comparable in the context of China's current growth trend, which is more like 6%, that would get you down to about zero or lower. So I think that's a fair starting point for assessing the implication of coronavirus this time around.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Richard DeKayser, economist with Wells Fargo in Washington, D.C. Coming up next, the coronavirus has spooked investors. We'll get advice on how you can protect your portfolio.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Turbulence in the world is affecting the markets. Let's discuss how to keep your cool in these situations, no matter what age you are, with Craig Bolanos, who is the founding partner and chief executive officer of Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, welcome back to the program. And when it comes to the markets, this is the worst week since October of 2008. Of course, that was in the midst of the financial crisis, and the market still had a long way to go before it reached bottom in early 2009. This may not be nearly as bad as the last one.
No, you know, it might not be nearly as bad as the last one. Investors always need to expect the unexpected because markets are going to do whatever they need to do to confuse as many people as they can at any given point in time. But depending on our age and where we're at, I think there's different actions that people should be focused on.
Well, let's start off with people who may be in their 50s or 60s or are looking at retirement as something that could happen either this year or next. What do you do to make sure that nest egg is still intact?
Well, I tell you what, if you are on the cusp of or already in retirement, meaning late 50s, early 60s, then I think the first thing is, listen, right now, today, don't panic, but you don't want to get lulled into a false sense of security there either. And I think what everybody needs to be taking stock of is the only way we get hurt as an investor is if we're forced to sell when prices are low. So the easiest remedy is for everybody on the cusp of retirement to make sure that they already have squirreled away 2 to 3 years of safe investments so that you're not forced to withdraw from your portfolio if prices decline further. I think that's the first thing that we need to get in play. And if you don't have that, you ought to work on starting to build towards it right now.
What about the younger investor? I mean, time's on their side on this one, right?
Oh, you know what, Jennifer, you nailed it on the head. But it deserves to be reminded because I don't want the young investors to be discouraged from investing. I want the young investors to realize that it's your savings rate, the amount of money you're putting away, that matters so much more than your actual rate of return. And for the young investors, just remember back to SARS, bird flu, MERS, Ebola, Zika. Everything turned out fine after the initial shell shocking. So young investors, keep saving. You got plenty of time on your side.
And how often should we be checking the portfolio?
You know what? Some people discourage Jennifer looking at it every day. I don't think there's anything wrong with that because I think great results come from work, specifically homework. And I think the more connected you are to your money, the better you're going to do. So whether that means checking it daily, checking it weekly, checking it monthly, I think any less frequently than monthly doesn't make any sense. But my message to people would be, don't just focus on investments. Make sure your investments are a part of a well-thought-out plan and review that plan periodically to make sure you're making all the right decisions.
And then very quickly, Craig, we talked about the people who are just starting out, the people who are on the cusp of retirement, but what if you're in your 40s?
Well, I tell you what, I'm there. I'm right in that age group, 40s, early 50s, and we still have time. We're probably 10 to 15 years from retirement, but let me focus our attention on something. In your 40s, you might have other savings vehicles like your children's college funds, etc. Make sure you're paying attention, not just to your IRAs and 401ks. Make sure you have the money secured when you're going to need it for things like college bills that could be coming right around the corner.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer of the Wealth Management Group based in Inverness and Downers Grove.
Markets are in the red again today. We are joined by Brian Battle, director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and advisor at PT Asset Management. Brian, it looks like coronavirus still affecting the markets. Everything's down. What is the specific fear here?
It sure is, Jennifer. The specific fear is predicated on the unknown. We have a new unknown virus that we're pretty sure is very contagious, but we're not sure how dangerous it is or what the mortality rate is. That's scientifically interesting. What matters to us as stock and bond holders and investors is what is the governmental effect? And the governmental effect is if there's a pandemic, everybody is ordered to stay home, don't go to work, and stay inside. That damages gross domestic product. People don't consume things, they don't go to work, they don't manufacture things, and the economy slows down. So because we are seeing a spreading in Europe, we're seeing it in the Middle East, we have a reported case on Long Island, there's a mysterious case in Northern California, this thing has come to the U.S., it's going to spread here, and we don't know how the isolation effect is going to affect production. So that is logical that stocks would be valued lower because less production means less sales, means less profit.
And then you have banks like Goldman Sachs came out and made the statement to cut the U.S. first quarter GDP forecast to just over 1% on the coronavirus. So it doesn't seem like that helps either.
No, and it's logical. You know, stocks are down. We touched down 10% for the week. So not to minimize that. I mean, the down 10% in a week has only happened four times since the 70s. It was after the 1987 crash. If you're old enough to remember that, the 2000 peak, the Y2K, you remember .com, Y2K, stocks opened the week after 9/11 and lost 10%, and then the crash in October of 08. So it's only happened four times. So it's a big deal. But we're to think that it might be over might be misplaced, because we did rally this today. We're off the lows this afternoon. Maybe that is optimism that this correction is enough. So a lot of that is speculative, because as I originated, my original statements were, this is a new virus. We don't know what the effects are going to be. And for sure, there's going to be some isolation going on, and that will damage demand and supply in the U.S. economy.
You mentioned that the markets, we were down about 900 earlier today, but right now the Dow is down 397, the NASDAQ is down 150, the S&P 500 is down about 44.
Yeah, and there's some optimism there, and I don't know that people are wrong, but I don't know there's enough information to think that we're at the bottom. Now, what's interesting is certainly the places that are suffering from permanent demand destruction, like airlines and casinos and hotels, there is some optimism. I mean, Marriott hotels, which have got destroyed the past week, is on an uptick today. Their stock is up $6. It's at $125. It's up $6 for the day. So there are some people thinking that this is enough, and that's what makes markets. Some people think it's true. I hope they're right, but I don't know that we can say that this is over yet. If we close down today 1,000 points, that would not surprise me on the Dow. It wouldn't scare me though either, because in the past week, stocks are down somewhere between 10% and 8.5%. The past year, they're only down 4.5%. If you go back 12 months, the S&P is up 10%. So this isn't a financial calamity. It's not the end of the world. We're selling off for real reasons. And we just have to make sure we keep this in context, because we're not sure how big a deal this thing's going to be.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. When it does come to the prediction business for trying to figure out how this is going to play out, it seems like there's a wide variety of outcomes when it comes to the spread or containment of coronavirus. There's one school of thought that says this will peter out, or at least become manageable by April. And then there's the other school of thought that says it breaks out just a little bit. And even if there's a little bit of a breakout, it veers into science fiction territory.
Yeah, that's right. So, and not to make too light of it, but you're right. The goalposts are, this is the influenza, or it's the Spanish flu, which killed 3 to 5% of the world population. So those are the goalposts. It seems way more like influenza, because what the problem with the pathogen is that it originated in China, and they're obtuse about the facts. So we're going to have to learn about what goes on in Europe and what happens here to find out what's really going on and how dangerous it is and who's going to catch it. So we're in really early stages, and when you have a divergence of opinion, it's really going to be bad or it's not a big deal. You get market swings like this, and the sell-off, as I said earlier, is reasonable and rational given the effect in the economy is still highly unknown.
China is already ordering the closure of many businesses. You have airlines canceling schedules to Asia. Japan is ending or closing schools for a month. Just in terms of the psychological factor and the impact on the markets, if there were any type of curtailment of public gatherings in the United States, what would the markets do in that situation?
Yeah, I think we're going to feel that, Rob. And so there's two effects of that, too. Remember, if everybody stays home and we cancel, they're talking about maybe canceling the Tokyo Olympics, which I'm sure they're desperate not to do. However, what will happen is the economy slowly just grinds to a halt as people stay home. There's less production. People give up and businesses just close. So that is the first effect. The second effect is when the all clear comes, because when you're ordered by the police or the state of Illinois to stay home, you stay home. Then you get the all clear signal. To go back to work the GDP just doesn't instantly spring back. There's a lag on the other end too, as the economy ramps back up again. So this isn't something that's going to go away in a quarter. You know, beginning to end is an uncertain term, but there is a slowdown and then there's a ramp back up again. So I think people might be underestimating how long this is going to take to clear the economy. But the statistics will definitely be reflecting the effects of this disturbance or this health scare. This is way more like a natural disaster than a financial disaster, financial interruption. And it's going to be a longer-term thing than, oh boy, it's all clear and it's over next week.
Brian Battle, Director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and Advisor at PT Asset Management. Thanks for joining us. Up next in Technology Thursday, how robots and testing equipment are being used to fight the coronavirus.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday. Drones, robots, and autonomous vehicles could be keys in controlling the global spread of disease. We're joined by Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor of the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome back to the program. Before we talk about some of the technology that could be applied to limit the spread of not only coronavirus or any epidemic or pandemic that could come down the pike, what is being deployed so far in China, Japan, South Korea, and the U.S. to halt the spread of coronavirus?
Well, the great question. The halt of the spread really depends on a lack of human contact, which obviously is really difficult when it comes to business. In other words, how do you keep human beings from getting in literal or figurative touch with each other and then continue business? And the short answer to that is in China, among others, they are deploying lots of robots, basically robots that are delivering things from one place to another so that human beings do not have to literally touch each other. And so that's happening in food service, in e-commerce, and of course, in medicine.
We have been talking for years about the idea of the Amazon delivery drone doing door-to-door service at your house instead of the person showing up with the box. If there were some sort of extended period of isolation in the U.S. where people had to stay inside, would that force that technology into the marketplace?
Absolutely. There's an upside and a downside to everything, obviously, and the upside to that to the idea of massive, you know, armies or airborne armies of drones, I guess you'd say, air forces of drones delivering things. That would be certainly something that would happen. It's already happening in a number of places. The downside that's disturbing to some who watch China and how they behave with their surveillance is that these drones are actually trying to spot to see if somebody needs medical attention. Now, that's fine, but when these drones are, and this is a concern and a plus both. The concern, of course, is privacy. And if these drones are surveilling large groups of people and determining if they need medical attention, that's helpful. But, of course, they're also surveilling for other things. So, again, there's an upside and a downside to each of these technologies.
With the technology being used in China or being considered in China, do you think that some American companies are, say, looking at this and saying, hey, maybe we have an opportunity. Maybe this is the push we need with the autonomous vehicle or something like that or our drones or something?
Well, I think it's sort of the opposite. Yes, but I think it's sort of the opposite effect. In other words, I think a lot of these companies have been working on this since, and we've chatted about it a number of times, actually, autonomous vehicles, drone delivery. Amazon has put a lot of money currently into pizza delivery, believe it or not, and there are 2 billion pizza deliveries a year in the United States. So if these things are already in development, they may be redeployed for something like this, but that's actually been going for a while. The thing to remember is that, again, that the common denominator here or the needed common denominator is distance. 3 feet, 6 feet, different medical experts are saying different things. But if the distance is the key, then folks will absolutely be developing technology to deliver things across that distance without human beings being involved.
And then what about the on the testing side, developing equipment that could quickly and easily detect the coronavirus in someone if they start to develop symptoms?
Well, first of all, the Chinese are notable for massive efforts sort of nationwide. Their culture, as many people know, it sort of values the collective over the individual, and they have been doing that with science, in particular with algorithms. So they are right now deploying huge amounts of money and human capital to try to develop the algorithms in particular to try to develop cures or maybe even vaccines for the coronavirus. So that's happening. In the United States, which is still famous for its science and certainly in Silicon Valley, that's happening as well. I don't think it's on a scale that the Chinese are deploying, but they certainly have a vested interest right now.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thanks for the insights, as always. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor of the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday and still to come the latest on the energy markets in the wake of coronavirus.
Your best stock option.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Energy markets are sliding as analysts expect more impact from the coronavirus. We welcome Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst, Price Group, and Fox Business News contributor. Phil, what's your take on what's going on with oil and gas?
Craziness. I mean, this is just wild moves every minute, every headline, every mood. But we know it's about demand destruction. And what that means is that because of this virus, people aren't going to fly, planes are going to get grounded, and we're not going to use oil. And there's been a lot of factories shut, concerns that they're going to stay shut longer than expected. And all of a sudden, we went from a global oil market that was the tightest it was in years as far as supplies to an oversupplied market, and it's really hit this market hard. But I'll tell you this, Jennifer. I mean, if you look at where we're at right now, I think they've priced in a lot more demand destruction than's actually happened. So we believe that some of this selling in oil is based more on fear than reality.
I think I heard that in January, China auto sales were down 92%, people just staying home. That has to affect gas and oil, correct?
It really does. You know, you have the Chinese New Year where they shut everything down and, you know, people generally don't buy cars. And then you had some of their major cities quarantine and telling people to stay home. If you're staying home, it's a little hard to buy a car unless you're buying it online. And I don't think they do that in China. So obviously it took a major hit. That's why the GM announced today the restart of their factory has been delayed a little bit, not so much because of the virus, but because they don't know if the demand's going to be there. We heard a report from OPEC today. Saudi Arabia said they're going to cut shipments of oil to China by 500,000 barrels a day. That's mainly because China basically is still to a large degree shut down, and that's what's really taken its toll.
Have your analysts or does the oil and gas industry even model a scenario where, you know, hundreds of millions of Americans are forced to stay home?
They haven't. You know, I don't think anybody's gone that far, and we hope that we don't get to that point. But assuming that that does happen, we're going to see the most substantial hit to demand maybe in history, right? I mean, right now, the current demand destruction is about the worst it's been since the financial crisis. And if you look at what happened during the financial crisis, the price of oil was at $147 a barrel and fell in a matter of months down to into the $30 a barrel area. So, you know, over $100 a barrel. So I guess that would be your best measure of to what possibly could happen. You know, oil just before this crisis happened was about $65 a barrel. You know, now we're back down to like $47 a barrel. You know, so I would imagine that if we continue to get bad news, we could see oil, you know, at the $25 a barrel area, worst case scenarios.
Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst, Price Group, and Fox Business News contributor. Always great to have you. And if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.